They will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Thanks so much for being a part of the program today. My name is Cam Edwards. It is great to have you with us. Coming up in just a matter of moments, we're going to talk with Evan Knappen, Second Amendment attorney in New Jersey and New Hampshire. A case today out of New Jersey involving a man named Roosevelt Twine, who is a licensed security guard, actually has a rare concealed carry license in the state of New Jersey, and is now facing multiple felony counts for having ammunition that was legal for him to own and transporting a firearm that was legal for him to transport. Yeah, I know. This is I'd say it's an incredible story, but it's not. It is par for the course, unfortunately, in the state of New Jersey, where your right to keep and bear arms is not recognized as a right. It is a privilege. Basically, the state of New Jersey, the way their gun laws are written, is a blanket prohibition on possessing a firearm, unless you get permission from your local government to simply possess a gun. Then you got to have another permission slip to carry a firearm. That permission slip, again, rarely doled out. But even with all of those laws in place to supposedly, you know, protect the community, legal gun owners are getting trapped by New Jersey's Byzantine laws. Although, again, it sounds like in this case, the law was simply ignored. Take a look and a listen to our conversation with Evan Knappen, Second Amendment attorney in New Jersey, about the case of Roosevelt Twine. Evan Knappen, thank you, sir, for coming on the program. It's good talking with you today.
My pleasure, Cam.
Unfortunately, the subject, not quite so pleasurable. Roosevelt Twine is a client of yours. And what exactly, I mean, it sounds like he is just being abused by the system there in New Jersey right now.
Oh, without a doubt. And Mr. Twine is a licensed armored car security guard. And when I say licensed, I mean he has one of the rare New Jersey carry licenses because he's an armored car guard. He has a SORA card, which is a certification for security officers. His handgun was acquired with a pistol purchase permit from New Jersey and registered in New Jersey. The ammunition that he had was issued to him by his company and is completely legal. He's coming home directly from work. He's a block from home, and he's stopped by three white police officers who stop him for alleged tinted windows. And he immediately tells them who he is, what he's about. He has his credentials, everything. And yet he still gets charged. He's completely cooperative. You know, total law-abiding, 100% good guy. And he gets arrested and charged with unlawful possession of hollow-nose ammunition. And what he had was Hornaday critical duty ammo. And that is a polymer-filled round. It is not hollow-point ammunition. And it's not just me saying it as a matter of law. It is the New Jersey State Police, on their website, on their Q&A, FAQ, question 13, when they ask about hollow point ammunition and explain it, and they say by name that Hornaday critical duty is not hollow nose ammunition, yet he's still charged with it. And he's charged with unlawful, quote, transportation of his gun, which is ridiculous because the line right in the law there where it talks about those that transport weapons says unless you're licensed pursuant to Chapter 58. Well, what do you think a carry license is in Jersey? It's a license issued pursuant to Chapter 58, Section 4, 58-4, license to carry a handgun. So he's not guilty of that. But these two charges in Jersey, because there's no gun offense in Jersey, it's not a felony-level offense.
Mm-hmm.
Up to 18 months in state's prison. If he's convicted, he becomes a convicted felon. And now he's suspended from his job for doing nothing wrong, Cam. It is thing.
It's sickening. I mean, it absolutely is, Evan. And again, this is, you know, you got Governor Phil Murphy right now who's talking about going after legal gun owners, jacking up the fees to purchase a firearm, raising the fees to get one of those rare concealed carry licenses. You know, the efforts there seem to be aimed solely at the legal gun owners in the state of New Jersey, trying to make it so dangerous to exercise a right that people simply won't do it. And the case of Mr. Twine, I think, is a perfect example of this. You know, I got to say, I mean, from the stop itself, Evan, you know, for the allegedly tinted windows, this whole thing just smells really, really bad. But I am shocked. Well, I shouldn't be. I am disheartened that we have not seen a prosecutor just step up and say, all right, this is ridiculous. The ammo is legal. He's a concealed carry holder. Why are you bringing these charges? Why did you even make this arrest? None of that obviously has happened, has it?
It hasn't happened yet. Now, granted, it is, you know, we still haven't had our first court appearance because of how this system works. But he's charged, and the charges being felony level offenses should have gone to the prosecutor. We sent a letter to the prosecutor requesting the prosecutor to drop the charges. So I think, to be fair, you know, the prosecutor still has some time to review it and see that exactly what I'm saying is the case and drop it. I'm not blaming the prosecutor yet, mm-hmm. hopefully not, because hopefully the prosecutor will absolutely do the right thing and dismiss it. But there's an issue to the law enforcement and their training and their attitude that comes from the top, Cam. It comes from the Attorney General's office down, the narrative, the agenda, the anti-gun. It doesn't matter if you're licensed, law-abiding. We're out to get you and your guns attitude. That is exactly what occurred here. And that is bad for everyone, man. It's bad for law enforcement, and it's bad for law-abiding citizens, and it's horrible for the Second Amendment. And this is what you get from it. You get licensed, law-abiding citizens, hardworking, good guys, getting felony charges placed upon them and having their entire life and career thrown into turmoil. And that's what is exactly the case here. Hopefully we can get it to go away quickly, and hopefully we can get him back in his job and career. But at this point, they've seized his gun. And he's suspended from work. The police have taken his license, permitted, registered handgun from him, taken it, and he's suspended from work because he got arrested and charged with felony level offense, even though he's not guilty of these things. It can be plainly seen by simply going on the state police website or simply reading the law in its entirety that has the exemption clear as a bell that if you have the license, you're good.
How's Mr. Twine doing right now? How are his spirits?
He is he's not happy about everything he's going through, but he's a strong, reasonable person who believes that the right thing will happen, and he's a fighter, and let me tell you something else about him as a person. He's a really good guy, too. I mean, he's just straight arrow, good guy, wonderful to speak with. I mean, he is a really good person and totally respectful of everyone in the system. And this is why it's so tragic to take this guy and put him through this. It's just he's an embodiment of the law-abiding citizen.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, you know, this is Roosevelt Twine is the type of guy that supposedly Phil Murphy and the anti-gun lawmakers in New Jersey say they have no interest in, right? Because he's not the problem. And they keep saying, oh, we got to crack down on these people illicitly getting guns. We got to crack down on these gang members. But then all of their efforts end up cracking down on the law-abiding people, the folks who have jumped through every hoop and hurdle put before them in New Jersey. They've managed to navigate that maze of red tape in order to obtain their concealed carry license, to do everything legally. And this is what happens. I mean, again, it's just outrageous to me.
It is, and it's an agenda and a narrative and they don't care about the harm that it does to good people. They don't distinguish between law-abiding and criminal, and they lump anybody that has a gun, even the licensed gun owner, into a category of criminal and treat them as such. And that is what is the standard operating procedure in New Jersey. Anyone who's a gun owner in New Jersey, they've seen it over and over again with the threats and problem. Cam, you know how many cases we've done and talked about. I mean, New Jersey just doesn't want to change its evil ways. They're embedded, and it is the battle lines on the Second Amendment here, you know, the front lines. And Jersey is beyond the bad laws. It embraces the whole government from the top levels through the system. And that's what makes it so unbelievably bad here.
Yeah, this was in Roselle Park. Where is that in New Jersey, Evan?
North Jersey.
Okay.
It's North Jersey. And that's where it took place. That's correct. And, you know, this is even knowing how difficult it is to get a carry license and the amount of background check screening and just going into every aspect of this person before they're given a license is essentially amazing when you think here is this license in New Jersey security guard, armored car guard, who's gone through all that scrutiny and still, they feel that this guy should be, you know, should have been charged here with some type of gun law. I mean, why? What? Where is the common sense? And they talk about common sense gun laws, but how about application of them in a common sense manner? You know, the rarity, right?
Yep.
You don't see that. No, it's the Yankees will talk about victims of gun violence, but what's really at stake is victims of gun laws. And that's what New Jersey creates. Victims of gun laws. And Roosevelt is another example of that.
So how soon might the prosecutor, when is the first court hearing scheduled? I mean, when might we see the prosecutor have the opportunity to do the right thing and drop these charges?
Well, I don't know the date right off, but I can tell you that it's within his power at any time before that even to do it. Sent our letter. We've laid out the facts and sent him, you know, all the information from the state police website and cited the law and explained it. So hopefully somebody there who has the authority to take action will take action sooner rather than later. Even at a first appearance, we can't force the issue because under the Jersey rules, we'd have to wait till he's indicted before he could even file a motion to dismiss. So anything pre-indictment becomes discretionary with the prosecutor. So, and you know, so until he's criminally charged and he has a complaint, but the next step before we formally can take action, beyond trying to have a dialogue with the prosecutor, which we're trying to do, is after indictment. And the last thing we need to see is him indicted on this next. I mean, come on.
Right.
It needs to go indictment. I would find it hard to believe that a prosecutor would actually want to continue with this. But then again, it's New Jersey, and you never know. Because you can end up with, you know, some prosecutor wants to dig his heels in and wants to pursue the agenda and the narrative and keep it going. And look, if that's what they're going to do, then you know what? It's only going to get worse for them. And if they want to see what I'm talking about, all they have to do is look at Shanine Allen's case.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll, right. They need this to get to the billboard stage. I mean, come on.
Well, I was going to ask about that. I mean, I know that there's a GoFundMe right now for Roosevelt to help pay his legal fees. What is there anything else that, that gun owners and Second Amendment supporters, both in New Jersey and outside of New Jersey, can do right now, or is that the is that the best step for him? Yeah,
yeah. The best step is anything you could do to help him is very much appreciated. He's just a decent, hardworking guy as a security guard. He's not, you know, he's not Michael Bloomberg. You know, he's working guy that believes in his right to bear arms, trying to protect the public and do his job. So anything like that would be helpful. Of course, in the big picture, we need to get out and vote. We need to join the organizations that support our right to keep and bear arms. All those things that you and I tell folks all the time, mm-hmm. it still applies. It still applies more than ever.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, in New Jersey, yep. I mean, we've seen the Second Amendment sanctuary movement take hold. I just had a story yesterday about Atlantic County becoming, I believe, it wasn't a Second Amendment sanctuary, but it was a gun owner constitutional county. I forget the phrasing, but we are seeing at the local level, gun owners and Second Amendment supporters are using their voice. They're talking to their local freeholders. They're talking to their city council members. And you know, I think it's fantastic to see. But as you say, you got to keep up the pressure.
It does. And those sanctuary movements are great. They send a message. They make clear the position that is, you know, currently trying to be suppressed in New Jersey. And there's really a movement of the people to reject the anti-gun policies and anti-Second Amendment actions. And this is a great way to express it. And it kind of, it's also a pure grassroots phenomenon, you know, it really is. It's a great thing. There's no group that I know of that said, hey, here's our objective. Let's make this that. No, these are people, grassroots level, joining together to get these things done. And that is just the best. That's very encouraging.
I'm telling you, I hope it doesn't get to this point, but, you know, I'm ready to show up outside of court for that first court appearance. Let's have a rally for Roosevelt if need be, Evan.
Well, I appreciate it. And like I said, I'm hopeful that the prosecutor will see exactly what I'm talking about and won't prolong the mistake and problem here that took place. This effect that's just harming a decent, good guy, licensed, legal. Come on, you know.
And I realize this is a this would be like a separate case, but is there any way to go after the police department for arresting somebody, you know, for who wasn't violating the law?
Yeah, there is. But at this time, at this stage, what we're focused on is getting him out from the system and getting him back into his job. Those other things, you know, can be looked at later.
Okay.
And such, but right now the focus is to get Roosevelt back to where he was and try to mitigate damages here from what has happened.
Well, listen, please let him know that we are following his case very closely. If there are any updates, please reach out and let me know. We'd love to get you back on the program. We'll make sure that folks know how to get to that GoFundMe so that they can support Roosevelt. Absolutely, and stay in touch, Evan. Thank you for everything you're doing up there.
Thank you, Cam. Thank you, too. Bye now.
Bye. Evan Knappa joining us here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Now, if you would like to donate to Roosevelt's case, we have the link for you, the GoFundMe link below the video window at YouTube. But I will also tell you it is gogetfunding.com/Roosevelt-Twine, TWYNE-legal-defense-fund. /. Or if you just go to gogetfunding.com and you search for Roosevelt Twine, again, TWYNE, you can find that funding to help pay his legal bills. Hopefully, again, the prosecutor acts with great haste in dismissing these charges. And we will certainly keep our eyes on this story, give you any developments as they become available. Right now, let's get to today's armed citizen story, our good deed of the day, our recidivist report. We will start there. Memphis, Tennessee, Shelby County, where a man charged in a double homicide on probation, according to records, Darren Walker, well known to police. As a matter of fact, he was on probation for kidnapping charges, according to Fox 13 in Memphis. Not the first time, by the way, that the 24-year-old has faced the long arm of the law. In this most recent case, Walker's accused of killing Destiny Wilkins and Nayeli Bobby Jean Bradford Aisha Love inside of a black Chevy Impala. It's around 3 a.m. last Monday. One woman able to escape from the car, the other stuck inside with her killer. Detectives later found the car abandoned with the second victim dead inside. Telephone records from cell phones recovered from the scene led detectives to believe that the victims were in the area to pick up the suspect. And again, that suspect, Darren Walker, on probation for kidnapping. Now he's been charged with two counts of first-degree murder, theft of property, and especially aggravated kidnapping. Criminal record check shows that Walker has been charged with aggravated rape and kidnapping multiple times since 2004. He was arrested back in 2015 for domestic assault causing bodily harm. Those charges were dismissed because of, quote, lack of prosecution. October of 2015. Walker arrested for aggravated rape, sex assault, aggravated robbery, and aggravated kidnapping. Those charges dismissed, again, because of a lack of prosecution. He was also arrested in December of 2015 for aggravated robbery, aggravated rape, and especially aggravated killing. No word on when the actual kidnapping conviction that landed Walker on probation took place, but apparently not really much time, if any, behind bars for any of these violent crimes. And in a lot of cases, again, it appears weren't even prosecuting Mr. Walker for those crimes that he was arrested and charged with. Why is that? Was this a lack of cooperating witnesses? Was there a problem with evidence? What was the reason why Darren Walker's cases never went to trial? In fact, never even got to a plea bargain. We don't know yet. Hopefully, we'll find out some of those answers. But Darren Walker, here in Memphis, Tennessee, he's the subject of today's recidivist report. Our armed citizen story from Cleveland County, North Carolina, where a man fatally shot a suspect who attacked him outside of his home. This according to Fox 46 in Charlotte, North Carolina. This happened early Wednesday morning, just after 1 o'clock in the morning. Someone beating on the side of a home in Shelby, North Carolina. The owner of that home, a man named Donald Batista, then grabbed his pistol, according to police, walked outside to see what was going on. He saw somebody run into the wood line behind his home, and then he was attacked by a suspect who was holding a wooden deck railing. According to police, Batista received several defensive wounds before he fired one shot, killing the suspect, later identified as Robert Burns. Police investigating found that Burns had been staying with friends at the same mobile home park as Batista. He had an altercation with one of the friends, left the home shortly before the shooting. Witnesses said it appeared that Burns was, quote, extremely impaired. Batista did not know Burns before this incident. No charges have been filed. Again, it appears to be a clear-cut case of self-defense. We'll keep our eyes on the story, bring any more details as it become available. And finally today, our good deed of the day, Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin, where a police officer going above and beyond to save a disabled man from a burning building. NBC 15. WMTV reporting that it was a Saturday night, a police sergeant risking his life, Sergeant Marcus Tasul, pulled up on the scene about 2 minutes after emergency crews had responded to an apartment fire there in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. Several residents told him that a disabled man was still inside that complex. And as WMTV says, despite flames covering one of the walls and the roof line, Tasul reportedly rushed through the heavy black smoke to save the man. Tasul couldn't find him. He checked again before coming out of the complex. That's when he learned that he was originally given the wrong apartment number. So then, again, keep in mind that this structure is still in flames at this point. The fire is only spreading. But at that point, Sergeant Tasul then ran back inside that building, went to the correct apartment, located that disabled individual who was unable to move, and was able to take him outside of that building to safety. The Sturgeon Bay Police Department commending Sergeant Tasul on its Facebook page, just as we are commending the sergeant today here on Bearing Arms, Cam & Company, in the right place at the right time and willing and able to do the right thing. Sergeant Marcus Tasul there in Sturgeon Bay, Wisconsin. We thank you, sir, for your very good deed. That is about all the time we've got for you on this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Coming up on Friday's program, though, we're going to talk with John Stokes, editor at The Prepared, about the coronavirus. And it's not just because I'm coming down with a cold that has got me thinking about this. What are some of the things that you need to be doing here to get ready in case we do see some disruption in our day-to-day lives? We'll get you caught up on all of that on the next edition of Marion Arms Cam and Company. Don't forget, you can subscribe to the program at Town Hall Media on YouTube, also Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, townhall.com's podcast page. You can also become a VIP member of Bearing Arms at BearingArms.com. And you get exclusive analysis, commentary, and of course, we certainly do thank you for your support for our Second Amendment journalism each and every day. Have a great rest of your Thursday. We'll see you back here soon with another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company.